This is the Experience Lab, the official podcast of digital scientists from Atlanta, Georgia. We're an experience lab that explores and builds digital products. My name is Rob Hall, and I'm the Senior Director of Product at DS.
And I'm Jake Cosgrove, Senior Product Manager.
Thanks for listening. Hey, Jay.
What up?
It's a beautiful day.
Dude, it is gorgeous.
It's unseasonably warm.
I think it was 65 on my drive in.
It's nice, but, you know, global warming.
I was going to say, this is the reason I live in the South, but maybe I shouldn't be so happy so quickly.
Yeah, about that. So what's new? Anything exciting going on in your world?
Well, actually, we just had our second kiddo, so that's pretty exciting.
That is very exciting.
Yep. Evelyn Lee. She's a cutie. Thank God.
She is adorable.
Thanks, man.
Clearly, she takes after her mother.
Yes. Yeah. Thank God for that, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, hey, I heard you have a new little one in your house, too.
Oh, I do. We have a new puppy.
A little different.
A little different, but also similar. You know, there's still the late night feedings and so on, or the late night potty break.
That slightly less diapers, but
slightly less, but still exhausting.
Still exhausting.
Yes.
Well, your pup is pretty cute too.
Why, thank you. Yes, his name is Laird Falcor Finley, and we just call him Finn for short.
Yeah, I was gonna say he'll never learn that name.
Oh no, no, not a chance. We'll get a woof out of him, and that'll be pretty good. Nice. So, Jay, what are we talking about today?
Well, we thought we would cap off season one with a little retrospective.
Do tell.
Yeah, so we're going to go over today how the podcast has done in 2020 and run a retrospective on it. And we'll also talk about what retrospectives are in general.
This is a really good topic, especially for product managers who are looking for a little advice on how to get better at running retrospectives. They're a very important part of any product team that's either running in a sprint cadence or has just completed a big release. Any kind of major milestone that you reach, I think it's very important that you pause and take the time to reflect on how you've done and where things are going moving forward.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So let's break it down. How would you define a retrospective?
That's a great question. My personal definition of a retrospective is simply an organized meeting in which product team, your product manager, if there's a project manager involved, your developers, designers, you get together in an intentional way to reflect upon the activities that you've completed and in a real and transparent manner, certainly with guardrails and with boundaries. But the idea is to create a safe space where you can realistically talk about what's gone well, what needs improvement, and what you're going to do next, what actions are going to follow to either continue improvement, to continue delivery, or to course correct.
I love that. And we talk about this pretty frequently, but one of the things you'll learn as your tenure expands in product management is that process can't really be sacred. And really, process is just a tool. It's a tool that we implement to create efficiency. And using retrospectives allows us to analyze our process up to that point and determine what's working and what's not. And even the practice of using retrospectives, I think, has to be questioned a little bit too.
How so?
Well, one of the retrospectives I ran in my early days where I was being very faithful to run them after every 2-week sprint, the feedback I got from the team was, we do retrospectives too often.
What?
I know.
How often were you doing them?
Just every 2 weeks at the end of the sprint. I was a very good, faithful, agile scrum man at the time.
Very faithful.
Very faithful. By the book. And it kind of shocked me, you know, because I had kind of lived and died on the hill that was Scrum up to that point. And then really had to consider that feedback after the retrospective of, do I allow my process to be broken? Do I hold so sacredly to Scrum?
What was the feedback you were getting, though, from your team that indicated that they were, I mean, because you're right, the process prescribes a retrospective at the conclusion of every sprint.
Right.
Why did the team feel like it was too much too often?
Well, at that point, I think the team had been set for like 6 months. It was a longstanding project. And we just had really good communication. There was a lot of trust that was developed in the team. And so honestly, during a lot of our other ceremonies that we had, the stand-ups or even the like sprint plannings that we would do, ideas would be thrown out, even in Slack, you know, just hey, could we tweak this? And I tend to move very quickly on good ideas, you know, so if something got thrown in, I'd evaluate it. And, you know, as early as the next day, we changed pace.
Sure.
So, I mean, the team was smaller, which helped, you know, I think there was 3 to 5 people on it, something like that. And, but yeah, that was the first time I really had to question it. And that came out in a retrospective.
Huh. My past experience has been not doing enough retrospectives.
Interesting.
and mainly due to, at least in the agency world, of feeling this anxiety and stress about moving on to the next thing
right.
too quickly and allowing that pressure to dictate the dialogue, essentially,
right.
Instead of pushing back and saying, nope, this is really important. We need to press pause just for an hour or even less. To reflect and get these perspectives out on the table.
Yep.
They're very important.
And I think this is like every answer we give. The cadence that you use them and how you use them, the questions you ask, really depends on the team and where you are at the in the project and what is needed. Because I 100% agree. Like I didn't say any of that to say I don't recommend retrospectives. I was just saying that there's a real question that should be asked of what in my process is truly sacred and what isn't, and are we willing to bend?
So let's talk about that for a quick second. How do you determine through the makeup of your team how to best structure a retrospective? What are the types of considerations that are running through your mind when you're figuring out, you know, the right activities or the right way to structure the retro itself?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think size of team is going to be a big deal. Like if I've got 10 people in the room, then I've got to keep the exercises more snappy.
Sure.
So the number of stickies someone puts up on the board or the virtual board at this point, I might limit, and therefore I might pick exercises that allow for 1 or 2 pieces of input from each team member versus maybe there's 4 columns and everyone fills out 5 in each column or something like that.
Yeah.
So my go-to is probably the very typical one, which is, you know, what worked, what isn't working, and what do we never want to see again? What do we want more of? Those kind of things. And there's about a bazillion ways people word them. Today, we're actually going to use liked, learned, lacked, and longed for our retrospective. And it'll be the first time I've actually run that one.
That sounds very nice.
Yep. So size of team, and I would also say amount of time that I've got and how many retrospectives I've run with that team. Those are all going to go into it. If I've done maybe multiple using a certain exercise with the same team, then I'm going to switch it up. If there's people in the team that contribute less feedback, then I'm very mindful of them, and I might structure exercises that are really going to engage them.
So one rule of thumb I think that's very important for a product manager to keep in mind is that there is no one single perfect way to structure a retrospective.
Yep.
I would strongly propose that the only wrong way to structure a retro is by not setting clear boundaries and expectations up front.
Yeah, I would agree.
You don't want to run a retrospective without any preparation.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd want to let your team know in clear language what type of feedback is expected and allowable during the conversation.
Yeah. I'd specifically say there that you want to make it very clear that we steer away from personal attacks 100%.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's what you're trying to avoid, is it getting incredibly personal. Keep it on the work.
That's correct. I think there's, in any team where there are where there's a diversity of thought and a diversity of ideas, there's bound to be some level of personal conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And as we talked about last time in our conversation about niceness disease, there can be a real temptation to avoid dealing with that conflict or a fear of engaging mm-hmm. with that conflict to try and understand each other's point of view. But where I think a team can grow very toxic is when we're characterizing our remarks towards the individual and their character and their makeup as a person,
right,
rather than the outcome that was delivered in the work itself. And so when we resort to making commentary in the retrospective about the style of a person's communication or the tone of voice that they use, and not that those can be points of concern, I would just argue that those are better discussed in the format of a one-on-one,
yep,
rather than out in the open in front of the entire team where someone's feelings could be hurt or someone could potentially be humiliated without, you know, really that being the appropriate forum
yeah.
for that type of feedback to be discussed.
Yeah. I mean, I think the saying that you praise in public and critique in private mm-hmm. is a real mark of maturity in the workforce.
Agreed.
And I think a lot of times when people resort to personal critique in these types of meetings is because they're shying away from those direct conversations and sometimes even trying to, like, you know, get allies in the meeting to gang up. And that's really not the culture you want to set. So I agree. Set good boundaries at the beginning of your retro.
Now, at the same time, that does not mean you want to shy away from constructive criticism of the team.
Mm-hmm.
But the important thing is to use the royal we rather than you.
Yeah.
So we as a team failed to hit the mark in X, Y, and Z concrete way. You know, relying on your KPIs or your OKRs that you've set at the outset of the sprint, again, as your North Star, to objectively talk about whether or not, you know, the sprint was or the project as a whole was successful. But avoiding ad hominem attacks when possible is very important.
Agreed. Well, there's a couple good books out there and good resources that you can use if you're new at running retros or if you're stale with your retros and looking for some different things. I know one we've used here are retro cards. I think Edgar Allan is the one. If you Google that, you should find them. It's like a deck of cards. And
they're super cool.
Super cool. Great yeah. questions on there that can really spark new ideas. But honestly, if you Google retro exercises, you will very quickly get a pretty good list of them.
Yeah. There's a couple of other good books that are out there. Fun Retrospectives by Paolo Caroli. Mm. That's a pretty good one. He's got a lot of nice activities for making your retrospective more engaging and fun. There's also, this is more of a standard book about retrospectives generally within the Agile framework. It's called Agile Retrospectives, Making Good Teams Great by Esther Derby and Diana Larson. That's from the Pragmatic Marketing Group. Many product managers have learned how to product manage through Pragmatic Group's materials and their courses of studies. It's a good primer.
All right, let's switch gears here and get into our 2020 retro on the Experience Lab podcast.
Okay, just to be clear, we're not going to wax poetic on how terrible 2020 was, because I think everybody's beaten the year, beaten it to a pulp adequately enough.
Yeah, this is good. Let's set that as a boundary at the outset of our retrospective.
That's the first boundary.
Wrap.
Yeah.
Number one, 2020's already been beat down. No comments on the year. Number two, don't attack me or I will punch back.
We'll see.
Just kidding.
We're socially distant, so, you know.
Yeah. Might be a little harder. You got a little more room to move.
That's right.
All right, so the first column, and we're just going to go in order here. Normally in a retrospective, we'd take some quiet time at the beginning to write stickies for all the columns, but the first column we're just going to go in order is liked. So what did you like, Rob, about how we ran the Experience Lab podcast in 2020?
Liked, yeah. It's the like column. I'm going to use the word love probably a little more.
Look at you.
I deeply enjoyed the opportunity to share with a much broader audience than we have in the past our experience and our strengths as a team.
I think
being able to showcase our talent and our expertise and talk about how we approach doing what we do all day, every day has been very, very rewarding.
Yeah, I would agree. I was pretty nervous about this at the beginning. I mean, the idea of of speaking, and especially not having, you know, 20 years under my belt in product management, made me feel very vulnerable and like, who am I to comment on this? But I think it really dug out of both of us, but certainly me, the fact that like there's a lot of knowledge that we've gained, even in my short career, that is worth sharing. That took a lot of time for us to learn just through the regular workday, and sometimes as mundane as it can be. And being able to share that, like you said, is feels really giving back to the community, you know?
Yes. Yeah, I completely agree.
I think another thing that was good was we've had some little traction on the podcast that's been awesome. And even though we haven't done a ton of promotion, we've received a lot of encouragement from listeners. And that has been something I've really enjoyed as well.
Yeah, I agree. We got a note from a listener just a few days ago, completely out of the blue on LinkedIn. Hey, Rob, just curious when season 2 is coming out. I love the show. Can't wait to hear more. It's things like that that are extremely validating and very helpful to know that what we're doing is providing value to people who are trying to get better at their craft.
All right, next column. Learned. What did we learn through 2020 on this podcast?
I think we learned that it is easy to create a podcast. It is more difficult to create a high-quality podcast. And one of the values that we kind of set forth at the beginning is that we wanted to focus on quality over quantity. So there's lots of other product management podcasts, some that are putting out an episode a week. Some of them are very good. But you can also kind of see a correlation between the production value of shows that are coming out more frequently versus those that are taking the time to refine the narrative, compose music for them,
yeah,
and so on and so forth. And so we found that it has been a really big effort. Every single episode that we have put out has included original compositions, some by other members of our team, Biff in particular.
some by you, man.
And some by me, sure. It all takes work. It all requires effort. But it, to me, is important as digital scientists, relates itself as an experience lab. Quality and the depth of our experience is, we strive to reflect that in the quality of our work.
Yep.
And it was, you know, kind of our vision that the podcast would also reflect the quality of the work that we do.
Yeah. I think there's a yin and yang to that too, because I know that internally, especially you, hemmed and hawed over this for a while. You know, there was probably at least a, 2 month period, 3 month period before we just set up the mics and started working on it. So I think there's, just like anything, you can overthink it sometimes. And sometimes you need to just kind of go for it and learn as you go. And I think we've done a good mix of both.
Yeah, I agree, Jay. I was actually going to say the next thing that I personally learned is that it is easy to allow imposter syndrome to take hold when you're listening to negative voices saying you can't do this,
yeah,
or you're not ready to do this, or you're not good enough to do this. And not that we had a lot of those voices, but they were there, and it was hard to overcome that.
Yeah.
And then finally just say, well, dadgummit, we're going to do it. Jay, get your mic. We're doing it. But with efforts like this, just getting started is often the hardest part.
Yeah. It's much easier once you're going.
That's right. And it has been, for sure.
I think a couple granular things to comment on before we're off the learn section. I think we learned that shorter episodes work better.
Yes.
You know, purely from analytics and not just analytics. I mean, friends and family comments from them, and in even listening back through episodes ourselves, I think the ones that come in between 20 and 30 minutes are some sort of a sweet spot for us.
Yeah, I agree. I think we've definitely seen that we can pack a lot of value into a shorter span of space. And if we have longer form topics, then we can break them into multiple episodes.
Yep, I agree. I think that works better. Another thing that is challenging, and I don't think we've quite figured it out fully, is doing remote recording together. Lag tends to be an issue that we're still kind of working through. But we've learned that it's an issue to be aware of.
Yeah, it's funny. There's a lot of podcasts that, I mean, I'd say most that have a similar format to our show are obviously recorded remotely. But there's a chemistry that's easily lacking, and I think a lot of that is in part to some technical limitations and kind of blockers on the technical side of things. And that's something we'll keep getting better at.
Third column, lacked. So this column is things that we saw and we want more of. So we didn't have quite enough of it.
I agree with the notion that we lacked consistency, and mainly in terms of release schedule.
Yeah.
As kind of a side project within our marketing organization. It's
and our day-to-day work.
Yeah, that's right. It takes time, and it has not been our primary responsibility day in and day out.
Maybe someday. That would be cool.
Maybe someday, right. Not to go back a step, but I think for us to continue pushing on consistency will be helpful.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think one thing that we've done a decent job, or specifically our marketing department has done a decent job of, is promotion. And we're really new and just figuring out how to not only market ourselves, but to market the podcast is a different thing. So I think we've got some work to do there this year.
Agreed.
Longed for. What do we want to add that we did not have in 2020 for our podcast?
VIP guests.
Yes.
Like really super special, fantastic semi-celebrities.
It's not to say the people that we had on the podcast weren't super special. They're VIPs in our heart.
I still think you're a VIP, Nick.
Aw. You call me Nick?
I still think you're a VIP, Jay. This coffee's decaf.
That was like a Ron Swanson moment.
That was totally right.
Yeah. We're getting too chummy.
That's right.
I would agree. I think more interviews from people outside of DS is definitely something that will that add some nice spice.
Yes, I agree, Fred.
Another thing I would throw in that I'd written down when I was thinking about this is crowd participation. So this is something we're going to definitely strive towards. We've already talked about it a little bit, but we'd like to get you guys, the listeners, more involved with asking questions or adding commentary on podcasts or topics that you would like us to talk about.
Yeah, I think for me, Jay, something I long for is the podcast to eventually create deeper conversations for our organization as a whole. Mm. So for it to continue being a path for doors to open.
Yeah. I think that's good, man.
Yep. Thank you for listening to the Experience Lab from Digital Scientists. To learn more about our team and the great work we do, or even hire us, visit our website at digitalscientists.com.